You're listening to the Apex Fantasy Football Podcast.
Hello, fellow fantasy football fanatics. Welcome to another episode of the Apex Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Asher Malk, joined as usual by my trusty co-hosts, Mike Brody and Dalton Cates, available on Twitter at Brody M, B-R-A-U-D-E-M for Mike, and for Dalton at Dalton Guru FF. Today, we are going to be doing an all overvalued lineup where we go through a plausible starting lineup that could be drafted by a fantasy owner using Apex settings, of course, three wide receivers, a flex, PPR, none of this two wide receiver nonsense you guys do on ESPN. We're in the big leagues here. We're all better than that. We're going to construct a team that we think has all overvalued players in the starting lineup, of course, backed up by objective analytics-based evidence. Then we are going to do another segment of Heads or Tails where Mike and Dalton debate the potential upside and downside of Mark Andrews. First, let's dive right in by discussing the all overvalued lineup. Now, remember, here at Apex, we are never anti-player. We are anti-ADP. Everyone has their price. So this is simply an alignment of ADP in projection. We're going to go position by position. So we're going to start with quarterback, then go into two running backs, three wide receivers, a tight end, and a flex. And we'll have a brief discussion about each player that we draft into this starting lineup. Now, I found preparing for this podcast and doing the research quite interesting. One thing I did find, it is tough to love your team, in my opinion, and not start out wide receiver heavy. You know, my team seem to look so much better when I do mock drafts. And I maybe if I have a top four pick, I start with running back, but then I go three straight wide receivers. It doesn't look nearly as good when I start wide receiver, running back, or running back, wide receiver. It was a real stretch for me, at least, to find wide receivers in the top 3 to 4 rounds who I thought were really overvalued. What were your guys' first impressions when we were doing this exercise, Mike?
Mainly, I just don't like targeting the older guys. So when I see those type of guys, naturally, I want to stay away from them. I want players who are ascending rather than descending. But yeah, the market does a really good job of valuing players. And it's not always easy to find players who are over or undervalued.
Dalton?
Yeah, it hurts me at my core when I'm drafting multiple running backs off the start, just because we've seen just so much correlation in that these wide receivers are such good hits within the 36 round drafts.
So remember, we are allies of the zero running back strategy here, or at least wide receiver heavy in the early rounds here on the Apex Fantasy Football Podcast. So let's start with quarterback. Mike has our quarterback. Mike, you want to tell us who our overvalued quarterback is at his current ADP?
So I'll start by saying I'm not a big proponent of taking quarterbacks early. So I am naturally staying away from quarterbacks who have a big price tag. So my overvalued quarterback is going to be Kyler Murray. He is being selected between quarterback 3 and 4, depending on the format, him and Dak Prescott. It's not that I don't think Kyler is a great player or going to improve in his second year with DeAndre Hopkins being added to the team, but owners are so enthusiastic about Kyler that he's often going in front of Dak Prescott, who outscored him by 4.2 fantasy points per game last year. Prescott's also added CeeDee Lamb, and there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about what they're doing. The Cowboys averaged the most yards per play last year. So even though Kyler should improve in a year or two, I don't expect him to really bridge that gap with Prescott. Prescott, I think, behind Patrick Mahomes, may be the favorite to lead the NFL in passing touchdowns. When you compare Kyler to other players who are being selected in his range, you can get somebody like Tyler Boyd or DeAndre Swift or Cam Akers, J.K. Dobbins, Michael Gallup, Landry. So I would prefer to target those type of players with my 6th round selection and select somebody like Carson Wentz, who averaged just 0.2 fewer points than Kyler last year, and all of his receivers were injured, or somebody like Stafford, who you can get 50 picks later and average 4.4 more fantasy points per game than Kyler last year.
really going after my keeper league and my home league with my two quarterback league. Mike, really, thanks for making me feel personally attacked on that one.
But you have to have realistic expectations.
Dude, you're also coming after my Cardinals team, fandom right here, bro. What's going on over there?
Nobody cares about your fantasy team.
How dare you? I must admit, I probably agree with you on this one. Early in the year, it seemed like the Cardinals went with a deep the Kingsbury really tried to introduce his system early with a deep passing approach, but it almost seemed like, and to his credit, realizing he didn't have the offensive line to give Kyler that kind of time, not wanting to shell shock him, they kind of switched to a more of a West Coast style offense. So I do think a lot of his upside hinges on whether they're going to try and institute that classic Kingsbury system, where it focuses on developing deep routes versus the kind of dink and dunk offense they went through last year. And of course, his rushing upside. I mean, he could very well be this year's Baker Mayfield, and that we expect this huge jump because of new weapons and maybe a young coach, but it's not at all guaranteed. Anything before we move on, Dalton?
Yeah, so just one quick thing is we know that Kyler is very likely going to be a good player, but he's already priced into the ceiling right now. He's going as the quarterback three, and what we good saw point. Like a player like Lamar Jackson last year, he was going after the quarterback 10. So that's kind of where the difference in price is. When you can get a Lamar Jackson or someone at Kyler Murray's caliber in that range, it's totally different than when you're drafting him already close to the ceiling right now.
Yeah, and I actually can't really think about a year where there wasn't a quarterback available in the 8th, 9th, 10th round that wasn't a top five guy. You know, we go back to Big Ben a few years ago, Mahomes, especially in his MVP year, Lamar Jackson last year. So no reason to reach on a quarterback. I'm going to go into the first running back, and this pains me to do. As a big Titans fan, I have to say, I think Derrick Henry is really overvalued. Now, I love Derrick Henry. Watching him last year was really special. You know, I don't think we've made the AFC Championship game since, 03 with Eddie George and Steve McNair. But I did have to be realistic about playing in a PPR league. And so what I did for this exercise, I looked at running backs since 2010, kind of the pass heavy, more modern era where they laxed up the pass interference rules, and RB1s, top 12 running backs who had less than 35 targets, and what they did the following season. For contextual purposes, Derrick Henry was last year's RB5 on 24 targets. This year, he's going as the 7th overall pick as the running back 6. So again, let me go back to the 7 examples of what happened the next year when a running back was a top 12 running back with less than 35 targets. In 2010, Rashad Mendenhall, y'all remember Mendy, was the RB11. The next year, he was the RB22. Next year, 2011, Michael Turner was the RB8. Next year, he was the RB21. He only got 30 targets. Mendenhall got 28 targets the next year. Alfred Morris, the running back 7, his rookie year in 2012. Of course, we all remember that. Team Roy Helu was not exactly successful that year. The next year, he was the running back 19 with 12 targets, and he still had 276 carries. Jeremy Hill in 2014 was the RB10. The next year, he had 19 targets, was the RB20. Todd Gurley is the exception. He was the RB9 in 2015. He was only the RB15 his sophomore year, but he did have 58 targets. LeGarrette Blount, the RB9 with the Patriots, the next year, he had 8 targets. He was the RB45. And then Jay Ajayi in 2016 as well was the RB11. The next year, he had 34 targets, was the RB35. One of these players saw more than 34 targets the following season, and all besides Todd Gurley finished outside the top 18 running backs. Now, Gurley is kind of an exception because that was his sophomore year. We can expect a little bit of jump in production from there. But Derrick Henry is he's going to be 27 years old, right? This is not a guy who's going from his rookie to sophomore year. The craziest statistic about all of this is that of all the guys I just listed in the follow-up season where almost none of them were a top 18 running back, they all played at least 14 games, and 5 of the 7 played all 16 games. This was not an injury sort of thing. So in order for Derrick Henry to live up to his ADP, he would have to be historically good. He would have to break. He would be at the outlier among outliers to finish in the top 12, let alone the top six among running backs. There would be a huge historical zag. And as Mike has pointed out, you know, 26, 27, these are not exactly the peak ages for running backs. I'll link that in the show notes page. It's a really useful article. But I just don't see how last year wasn't Derrick Henry's ceiling. And the odds of him meeting that again, to me, cannot make up for taking him in the first half of the first round. Mike, Dalton, what are our thoughts on Derrick?
I completely agree with that. I think that it's very concerning that he only reached running back six, was it, with that kind of efficiency. And adding in that he doesn't have a lot of passing game work, it gives him a lot of volatility as a top running back, especially in PPR format. So we're mainly discussing PPR formats here, and he is a very risky player to maintain the type of efficiency that we saw when he finished as a top running back last year.
And yeah, we know that he's 100%. Not going to get an increase in targets like that. I mean, we just showed that it's just not, he's not going to be a 50 target guy ever. That's not who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And Asher, kind of going off of what you said about, you know, the following year's targets for these players, we've only seen 9 running backs since 2000 finish as an RB1 with under 20 receptions. And Derrick Henry had the second best season over there. And obviously wild efficiency. And he had just all those touchdowns because of how efficient that offense was last year. We have to expect regression. We have to understand that, you know, Derrick Henry is a fantastic football player, but he's not exactly the greatest fantasy pick in the first round of drafts because of his lack of receiving work.
Yeah, you know, Derrick Henry, I love you. If you're ever listening to this, but we're just fading you in fantasy, but please stay on the Titans and do what you did last year, okay? Dalton, our RB2 on our overvalued team, who you got?
I got Melvin Gordon here. So he's currently going in the third round of drafts, like early third round, roughly 304 since June 1st right now. So when it comes to a guy like Melvin Gordon, and we see that he plays the running back position, we understand that wide receivers, once we hit round 3 through round 6, they have a much higher win rate than running backs do in there. Quote unquote, the running back dead zone is what is termed down at RotoViz there in this range.
Dalton, what do you mean by win rate for our listeners?
So win rate is based off of best ball drafts. So if we look at best ball drafts, it is determined by if you draft a certain player, what percentage of the time do you win the league with them on your team? So wide receivers in the 3rd through 6th rounds give you a much better chance of winning your league when you're drafting players in these positions. Now, we also have to understand that the wide receiver 12, which is the back end of wide receiver 1, scores on average 245 PPR points. The average running back 12 in drafts scores as a 230 PPR points. So understanding that wide receivers score more than running backs outside of the pure elite running backs, the Christian McCaffreys, the Dalvin Cooks, the Saquon Barkleys, those are the guys that are going to give you that true edge. But other than that, these wide receivers actually outscore the running backs. So unless a running back profiles as someone who can be that elite running back, we have to take those wide receivers in those positions. And Melvin Gordon, just frankly, he's going to a team right now where there's already another good running back there. And yes, Melvin Gordon should be the lead back there. They signed him to a nice contract there. He definitely weighs more, profiles more a little bit as a workhorse than a guy like Philip Lindsay, but he really hasn't been that productive over Philip Lindsay. If you look over the past 2 years, Philip Lindsay on a per game average has actually been more efficient on the ground, actually rushed for more yards per game than Melvin Gordon. And he got less attempts than him. So Philip Lindsay, arguably, has been just as good on the ground, and we can't necessarily expect Melvin Gordon on a COVID-shortened season where he's a less time with the team to come over and just immediately become this workhorse. Mm-hmm. I think it's been more of a committee. And we also mentioned Royce Freeman is still there as well, who they spent third-round capital on, and he got some usage last year as well in the receiving game. So to expect Melvin Gordon to be the same guy that we saw him with the Chargers, I find a little bit unlikely, and I'd much rather take a wide receiver like a DJ Moore, a Juju Smith-Schuster, AJ Brown in that range. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that there's just too many good players in that range who you can hit on. And Melvin Gordon comes with a few warts. He sat out half of last season. He wasn't very good when he came back. And we still think that he's a good player, but his price, when being compared with a DJ Moore, is too expensive. And there's also obviously another talented running back there. So there's a lot of concern to invest your 3rd overall pick on this guy.
And, you know, that this might seem a bit drastic, but not only am I not convinced he's the best running back on his team, I'm not even convinced he's the second best running back on the team. You know, I don't know at this point in his career how much worse he is than, or how much better or worse he is than Royce Freeman, you know. And I would much rather have Phillip Lindsay. It kind of reminds me of an Eckler-Gordon situation where last year the Chargers realized, like, oh, maybe we really don't need Melvin Gordon. Eckler might actually be better. So maybe the Broncos will see something similar. It just, I can't imagine it's worth the risk in the third or fourth round because we're basing it on previous production. And as, again, Mike has shown, peak running back age. More than likely, when you think a running back has peaked, they've peaked, right? It is very rare for running back to peak, go down, and then see another peak. It's just, I can't imagine gambling that in the third or fourth round. Now,
and going to a new team with COVID going on can potentially have an impact. Phillip Lindsay is a lot more familiar with it, has rushed for 5 yards per carry in his first two seasons. So it's just not a guy that you want to take the risk on.
Yeah.
One last thing is Melvin Gordon is actually going to be 27 this year. And you mentioned on peak age right now, 24, 25 is when he's running back peak and he's entering 27 coming off a pretty bad year.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned that taking wide receivers at this range seems just so much easier. And I think that's kind of made apparent by who our wide receiver one is on our all overvalued team. Mike, who is our wide receiver one?
I'm going to say it's T.Y. Hilton. He is going as wide receiver 27. And just it's really the profile. I love T.Y. Hilton. I think he was unbelievable with Andrew Luck. But now he played last season at age 30. He had the lowest yards per target of his career. He previously had every year, I think, since his second year over 8.4 yards per target. And last year he dropped to 7.4 yards per target.
And something important to note there is that, like, this isn't like he played with Curtis Painter before, you know, like he has had worse quarterbacks than Jacoby Brissett. Mm-hmm. Keep going, Mike.
Yeah, so now he's entering his age 31 season. Yeah, Phillip Rivers is maybe a small upgrade at this point over Brissett, but I think it's fairly obvious that the Colts want to be a run-heavy team. They drafted Jonathan Taylor. Their offensive line is dominant. Last year, they attempted just 513 pass attempts. Even if we bump him up to around 550 and we give T.Y. Hilton the 22% market share, he's still only seeing 120 targets. So I think those things are all very concerning for a descending wide receiver, while we have some ascending wide receivers going around him in terms of Devontae Parker, Stephon Diggs, Marquise Brown, Michael Gallup, Tyler Boyd. So it's not like there's a lack of alternatives. And it's really hard for me to see T.Y. Hilton having a peak season like a Michael Gallup just had. And I think that he's going to be on an offense that throws significantly fewer touchdowns than Michael Gallup on Dallas. So I just think the alternatives going around Hilton are better at this point for redraft purposes.
And of course they drafted Pittman. They have Paris Campbell, who's going to be healthy. I'm with you on that. Dalton, anything on T.Y. Hilton?
Yeah, no, it's definitely more of an age concern with the new quarterback as well. That's just kind of the main thing, is we just have other options that we prefer there. Not necessarily T.Y. Hilton's going to be bad, but just we have other options that we think have a little more upside and offer a little bit more bang for their buck than T.Y. Hilton right now.
Yeah, and we at Apex, we're looking to take players on the upward trajectory of their career rather than toward the end of their peak. Or with T.Y. Hilton, arguably he's even, you know, maybe even far past his peak. Our wide receiver two, Dalton, who is our wide receiver two on our all overvalued team?
So it's going to be AJ Green, and it's going to kind of fall in the same category as like a T.Y. Hilton. We know that AJ Green has had a phenomenal career and he's had tons of production, but right now he's coming off a major injury where he missed his full entire season. And the season prior to that, he only played half the season. And if we look at the season prior to that, when he played his last full season, he was actually the least efficient of his career with only 7.5 yards per target when he got 140 targets. So things have changed since then. Tyler Boyd has now been a target monster for the Bengals. They now have drafted T. Higgins. John Ross has flashed when healthy. So there are other options within the offense where AJ Green may not necessarily get the same target share that he's seen in the past. Now he's entering age 32. Mike has done great research on peak age. Once wide receivers hit age 30, that's when they start to decline. Father Time catches up with everyone at some point. And to expect AJ Green to just suddenly bounce back it's a little bit unlikely to see him go back to where he was before. We could see him go back and just be a solid receiver, but for him to go back to the heights where he was before, it's very unlikely. Blair Andrews did some great research at RotoViz on bounce back seasons, and they're actually a lot less likely than you would think. Roughly a third of players only bounce back, and those are much younger players who have earlier forms of production. So AJ Green doesn't necessarily fit in that boat. So I'll be fading him because I'll be drafting other players like a Tyler Boyd, like a Jarvis Landry, like you mentioned, a Michael Gallup, even a Marquise Brown. Those are the guys that are going in that range, and I'd rather take shots on those guys who I feel like have much more upside than a guy like AJ Green bouncing back this year.
And similar to a guy like Derrick Henry, like he has to be historically good to buck this trend. You know, he has to be Jerry Rice good, right? If you look at wide receiver statistics of the all-time greats, the only one to really have incredible seasons past age 32 has been basically Jerry Rice. Maybe there's a fifth season in there somewhere. But it, again, I don't understand why you would take this gamble of he has to be an outlier for him to meet this ADP. Mike, any thoughts on AJ Green?
Yeah, I just completely agree with the point that bounce backs at this point are just very unlikely. This guy's old. He's coming off sitting out an entire season. I know he was an absolute stud, but I think his odds of finishing as a top 20 wide receiver are just really unlikely, and there's better bets around. Generally, what you see when you're drafting with people is there's some older people who maybe they didn't research as much information this year. And when I say people, I mean fantasy owners. And they see a name like T.Y. Hilton or A.J. Green, and they know it. And they're like, this is my guy. He dominated for me 3 years ago. So I think that it's fairly common for guys like that to have ADPs that are too high.
And, you know, this segment has been hard for us. You know, we used to love Melvin Gordon. We love T.Y. Hilton. We love A.J. Green. But you know what? It's time to move on, ladies and gentlemen. It is time to move on. Our wide receiver three on our all overvalued team is going to be Jamison Crowder. Again, there was a time his sophomore year where Mike and I drafted Jamison Crowder everywhere in the 16th round, and he was great for us. But alas, that is no longer the case. I'm going to be a little bit harsh here. I'm not going to lie. I call Jamison Crowder the ceilingless wonder without a floor. 21 of his last 40 games, he has under 10 fantasy points. Only four of those games, he is over 20. He has two 100-yard games in his past three seasons. Zero in the past two. If you don't get yards, you want catches, right? Maybe sort of a Julian Edelman, Jarvis Landry sort of deal. 31 of his last 40 games, he's under six catches. In 16 of his last 20, he has three or less catches. He has one multi-touchdown in the past 3 years, 11 total touchdowns the past 3 years. There was no Chris Herndon last year. He had Robbie Anderson being replaced by Denzel Perriman. They added Mims. This is a guy who is 5'8", 185 pounds, and is now 27 years old. He was 16th in targets last year and 26th in PPR scoring. I can't imagine a world where Jamison Crowder again finishes in the top 20 of targets. I mean, unless everyone else gets hurt and the Jets have a historically bad defense, at least finish like top 20 in PPR scoring if we're going to finish 16th in targets. This is not one of those cases where he won't outperform ADP. He is the wide receiver going as the wide receiver 40, right? But maybe he'll finish as the wide receiver 37, okay? Congratulations. You have gotten yourself a guy who will finish and help you finish in sixth place. This is the classic, I'm shooting to be a borderline playoff team kind of pick. If you draft Jamison Crowder, you're the fancy one who's like, you know, who thinks subjectively about he's the safety blanket, I can bank on 5 to 6 targets. Darnold loves him. He's a proven old school commodity. That's not what wins fantasy leagues. Congratulations on gaining 5 yards on 3rd and 8. Analytical thinking is not he's the safety blanket of Sam Darnold. Starting Jamison Crowder every week will leave you at a weekly disadvantage. There are very few spiked weeks, if any. And the floor is just not there. Marvin Jones, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Cooks, Christian Kirk are all within 10 picks of him. I'd even prefer a guy like Darius Slayton and Mike Williams both go later. And Anthony Miller goes 30 picks later than him. I'd prefer Anthony Miller to Jamison Crowder in a vacuum, even if their ADPs were the same. In fantasy football, one team wins, right? You don't get money for fifth place. You have to take risks. For poker players, Jamison Crowder is the queen 10 offsuit of fantasy players, right? If you want to call with queen 10 offsuit in off position and finish with a second or third best hand, great. draft Jamison Crowder, I will be passing. I will be folding that hand. Any thoughts before we move on to our tight end boys?
Yeah, man.
Dalton, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, so I just got to say, man, it's pretty hot out in Arizona, 110 degrees. But, dude, I'm sweating from that take. Dude, that was absolute fire. And I feel for Jamison Crowder after that one, man, honestly. No, but you made some really good points on why Jamison Crowder is someone that you necessarily should be fading because of the other guys around him. And you don't want to go for that guy. And they also brought in technically two new playmakers in Breshad Perriman and Denzel Mims, but Chris Herndon's going to be coming back as well. So that's three new full weapons to that offense. So that target share that we saw last year is very unlikely to be there. He was necessarily the only guy there, which is why we saw him be productive in the games in which he got the targets. But again, for this year, we have to be targeting guys who are rising, who are coming up. He's going around, like you mentioned, a Mike Williams, even a Mecole Hardman as well in the Kansas City Chiefs offense is going in that range. So it's really hard for me to pull the trigger on him when even like a N'Keal Harry as well is another guy that we like. So definitely opportunity cost for him as well. And we want to be shooting for the stars after roughly the fifth round.
100%. I'm with it. I think that you don't want to draft guys who play for Adam Gase. Historically, that doesn't go well. Save Chris Herndon. If you want to take a jet, take Chris Herndon. But in addition to that, the point of targeting guys with upside who can finish as a top 24 wide receiver is probably the most important takeaway from this show. That is what we're going for. One team wins a fantasy football championship, and it's not a safe owner. So it may feel risky taking a Mecole Hardman. You don't know how he's going to end up. But if, God forbid, somebody like Tyreek Hill gets injured, then Mecole Hardman has league-winning potential. N'Keal Harry may not need an injury to have league-winning potential. Jamison Crowder does not have league-winning potential.
And if it were anywhere, it was last year that he could have won you a league. Like, he had over 120 targets, but he did mm-hmm. nothing. You know, we need to have a sign up here that says we've gone how many podcasts without mentioning AJ Brown or Chris Herndon. I have a feeling it's going to be zero. Our tight end on our overvalued team. I'm excited for this one. Mike, who's our tight end?
Okay, so everybody knows by now that Tyler Higbee blew up during the last five games of last season. Gerald Everett was leading him in targets by 59 to 33 in the last five games. Everett was hurt and Higbee blew up. He was the tight end one during that stretch, ahead of Kelsey, ahead of Kittle, ahead of all those guys. The issue is, I don't think that the Rams are going to continue to feature him. It seems that they do want to move to having two tight ends on the field, and I think that will have Everett running more routes and Higbee blocking more. Everett's a really good athlete. He has second round draft capital, and even this offseason, McVay said he's really, really excited about what Gerald Everett's going to do. He thinks that Tyler Higbee did a phenomenal job, but Everett's a guy that he needs to do a better job of utilizing his skill set because he's a difference maker. So, and this isn't a quote that just I handpicked from one random offseason. McVay has an affinity for Everett. Beat writers talk about him. McVay talks about him. Mm. And it's not that I don't like Higbee. It's that I don't think that he will get the target volume that's necessary for him to be a reliable tight end every week. I mean, the guy had 59 games of fantasy irrelevance prior to this five-game stretch. So I'm not going to trust the five-game sample size. If I'm going to select a tight end in that range, I would rather take Hunter Henry 10 picks later, who has been an excellent player since he stepped on a football field.
And especially if you're going to take Tyler Higbee, is he going with the tight end five right now or something? Maybe tight end six? I mean,
Higbee is going as the tight end seven. And it's a pretty big investment for somebody that we only saw a few games of production out of.
You know, is your team going to look better if you wait around and take Hunter Henry and then take a wide receiver, you take Higbee, or if you take Higbee and take the wide receiver later? Dalton, anything on Tyler Higbee?
Yeah, one thing to keep in mind when it comes to Tyler Higbee and his big breakout performance during those four games was he faced some of the worst tight end passing defenses.
That's a great point.
The Cardinals were an absolute C for offense. I was at that game. I was at that game, and they're just throwing to Tyler Higbee every single play because they couldn't stop him. They didn't have anybody to stop him. And that's the thing is these tight end defenses that they went against, it was a game plan specific type of thing to get Tyler Higbee involved there with Gerald Everett out. It made sense for them to go that route. Now, for us to totally bump up his ADP based off a four-game sample size, which, don't get me wrong, it was fantastic, and he performed as one of the top tight ends in the league during that span. But again, we have such a big sample size of him not producing, and for him to just suddenly be this guy who we saw in those four games may be a little bit too rich for my blood at tight end seven.
And, you know, the Cardinals have now drafted Isaiah Simmons, who never thought would fall to them in the draft, basically a guy – created to cover athletic tight ends anyway. So even if Higbee was the only guy there, we still might not see those spike week against the Cardinals anyway. Our flex position on Apex, of course, if you're playing a league without a flex, I'll put it nicely. I highly recommend you do so. Evan Silva always recommends adding one flex spot every year. I couldn't agree more. It makes more players relevant. It's a lot more fun. Who is our flex for our all-over value team, Dalton?
I got Raheem Mostert right now, and I understand that in the last, you know, week and a half since reports about him, you know, wanting to get traded or wanting to get this contract, his ADP is naturally going to drop. But I still think he is still overvalued. If we look at his current ADP, it's still at the back end of the fifth round. Like I mentioned, it's probably going to drop. But right now where it is, he's still way too overvalued. We're drafting him near his ceiling. One thing about Raheem Mostert is the fact that we usually don't see running backs, you know, break out this late in their career. There have only been two other running backs since 2000 to hit over 150 PPR points in their age 27 or age 28 season, which is what Raheem Mostert did. So he's hitting his age 28 season. We know it's way past the peak age for running backs. He's in a system which is very beneficial to him, and he thrives in that. But we also have to understand he's not even a start on the team. He didn't start one game for the 49ers. So while we could reasonably expect, based on last year, that he may be the best running back on the roster, we don't necessarily have the proof that he is necessarily going to be the starter and getting the most touches again this year with a fully healthy Tevin Coleman there. Also, he does not catch the ball. And when we talked about Derrick Henry, we mentioned how important it was for a running back to catch the ball. Raheem Mostert had under one reception per game last year. That's not the type of running back that we want to target. So we saw him finish roughly at 175 PPR points, which is roughly where he's going right now, maybe a little bit later, but we're drafting him right at his ceiling. There are a lot of scenarios into which Raheem Mostert doesn't pay that off, and I feel like he's a very, very risky play right now in the fifth round and even up to the sixth round in drafts.
And as far as Mostert goes, you know, I think it's important to note that Tevin Coleman started both halves of the Super Bowl, right? Like, this is not – we have major recency bias. And Mostert was great in the playoffs. Like, I'm not saying Tevin Coleman's better, anything like that. But clearly, the guy in charge of the team, Kyle Shanahan, does think Tevin Coleman is still a major factor. And, you know, he's clearly more brave than us. I mean, we started Tevin Coleman the week he had four touchdowns last year, and then he – went on to give us 3 points from then on, and we were jealous of Mostert, but it doesn't really justify Mostert's draft position. And Coleman, again, still very much relevant. Anything on Tevin Coleman, Mike? I'm sorry, yeah, anything on Mostert?
Yes. I think that the issue is you're targeting a running back in a timeshare. Time and time again, Shanahan has shown that he likes to use multiple running backs. And until we see a Jonathan Taylor or something there, it's hard to think that that's going to change with Raheem Mostert. Generally, in timeshares, you want to target the guy who's catching passes in PPR leagues. It's a lot easier to score points when you're catching passes. So I think the combination of being in a timeshare, not getting a lot of work, and although he's on a great offense, he's not catching many passes, and you throw in his profile that this is a guy that's old for a running back and just had some small production or good production and a small sample size last year, it makes it very difficult to think that he will outperform his average draft position this season.
Yeah. That is our all over value team. Just to recap, starting quarterback, and this is for one quarterback leagues, by the way. Kyler Murray is our quarterback. RB1's Derrick Henry. RB2's Melvin Gordon. Wide receiver 1, T.Y. Hilton. Wide receiver 2, A.J. Green. Wide receiver 3, Jamison Crowder. Tight end Tyler Higbee. And flex Raheem Mostert. We recommend avoiding those guys at their ADP. And if your team is made up of these players, well, you probably need to draft another fantasy team. And guess what? We have the site for you to do that on apexfantasyleagues.com. We have any kind of league you can really think of, right? We do email drafts where you have 8 hours to make a pick. We have live drafts where you do 90 seconds. We have a price point as low as $75 per buy and as high as $1,000 if you want the big prize. We have super flex leagues. We have dynasty leagues. We have super flex dynasty leagues. We have super flex auction dynasty leagues. We have live auction. We have email auctions. Anything you're looking for, we are your one-stop shop for not only fantasy leagues, but we write awesome advice for free on our Apex blog. We use a lot of that here on our show, and I invite you to check all that out to help you win your 2020 fantasy league, hopefully here on Apex. Now, let's move on to a segment that I always really enjoy, heads or tails. Remember, Mike or Dalton know what player we're talking about today. It's going to be Mark Andrews, but they have no idea if they're arguing for or against this player at his current price. One of them will call heads or tails, and if they guess correctly, they get to pick which side they want to argue. Mike, it is your turn. Are we going heads or tails today?
We're going heads.
Okay.
And just so the listeners know, we decided that we were doing Mark Andrews on this Zoom call minutes ago. So we don't have a whole lot prepared for this, but let's see what takes place.
You guys are getting fresh takes right now. And it is heads. Once again, okay. Mike, are we going for or against Mark Andrews?
Let me say that I like Mark Andrews a lot. Dalton likes Mark Andrews more than I do. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and let him argue in favor. And I will take the more difficult position and argue against him. So let's start off with Dalton and then I'll rebut him.
Okay.
That's so kind of you, man. That's so kind of you, Mikey. all right. So Mark Andrews, what do we have to say about Mark Andrews? First of all, as a prospect profile and what he has done so far in the NFL has been nothing but elite. If we compare him to some of the greatest tight ends to ever play the game, he ranks favorably up with the guys like Rob Gronkowski, the George Kittles, the Travis Kelce's. This is the type of group that Mark Andrews has put himself in throughout two seasons in the league. He had over 100 targets last year, and he didn't necessarily add any, you know, player of consequence in that offense in terms of a passing option. You know, they still have Marquise Brown, and they still have Mark Andrews, but Devin Duvernay, Miles Boykin, those guys aren't likely to get, you know, big target shares, so I don't think they're necessarily in the way for Mark Andrews to jump in production this year. So the Ravens last year were one of the most run-heavy teams in the league, and we saw them have crazy efficiency through passing the ball. But what that also means is that they're more likely to pass the ball more this year, meaning more opportunities in the passing game for Mark Andrews, even though we may see a touchdown regression for Mark Andrews because of that, but we may see more targets, which may lead to more receptions and more overall fantasy points for him to take another jump. And he kind of enters in that same category as we're looking for, these ascending players. Mark Andrews, you're getting him right now in the fourth round of drafts, and we also know how very important it is to get a tight end early in drafts. Best ball win rate, we touched on it earlier. If you're drafting a tight end in the first four rounds of a draft, you are 1.5 times more likely to win your league. So structurally, it makes a ton of sense to get a tight end early in drafts. And if you are unable to, if you're missing out on a Kittle or a Kelce, Mark Andrews is the next guy that you should absolutely be getting in the third or fourth round of drafts.
Wow. That's some solid points there. What is our, what's the anti there, Mike? Sounds like a lot of good stuff.
I don't have a bad word to say about Mark Andrews. I think he's proven that he's an elite football player, and I got nothing on him there. His offensive situation on Baltimore only allows him to get so many pass attempts, as they passed the fewest in the NFL last year. So one potential issue with him, although he's going to be on a high-scoring offense, is target volume. Last year, he had 98 targets, and I believe it was in 15 games. Zach Ertz, who is being drafted about 10 picks later than him, has an average of 145 targets over the past 2 years. So you can wait 10 picks, avoid Andrews, and take Ertz, who is going to get about 2.5 more targets per game if we're going based on last year. I don't see many reasons that Baltimore is going to change their offensive philosophy, and the Eagles remain one of the pass heaviest teams in the entire league. In terms of other pass catchers, yes, they added Jalen Reagor, which I'm not sure hurts Ertz. Alshon looks likely to start the year on the PUP list. So there aren't a lot of other targets on a team with good quarterback play who's going to pass a lot, who is good at scoring. So I think that as the number one option on his offense, who who will be throwing a lot. I think that there's a very good chance that Ertz is a great value pick here. And because he didn't have the same ascension as Mark Andrews last year, maybe he's getting a little bit more of a discount. And I think that it may be wise to take that discount. Not that we don't like Andrews, but Ertz is going to have more volume and do so at a cheaper price.
And I think it's important to note that Baltimore, I don't know if I've ever seen, I have no stats to back this up, but I don't think I've ever seen a team finish in the bottom five in pass attempts and number one in passing touchdowns. That is insane to me. When we can really, it would be, again, historically an outlier for Mark Andrews and the Ravens to repeat their passing touchdown rate from 2019 going into 2020. Dalton, any last rebuttal as to what Mike has to say?
No, I think you made some great points, and I think we should actually be targeting both these guys in drafts because of, like I mentioned, the tight end structurally. If you're missing out on a Kittle or a Kelce in the early drafts, you should definitely talk about those guys.
I agree with that, and I'd like to add that I think a lot of people look at tight end. If you don't get Kelce or Kittle, you fade tight end. And I think that there's a lot of value in Andrews and a lot of value in Ertz. And if these guys fall, they're really good players, provide you with a weekly advantage at not as high of a cost. So they're definitely guys to watch, see where they're going in your draft versus their average draft position, and maybe you can get a bargain on them.
And I saw a funny tweet. It was, you know, I'm not going to take Kelce or Kittle. I'm going to take Ertz or Andrews. Then the fourth, fifth round comes, you're like, I'm not going to take these guys. I'll settle for Higbee or Hunter Henry. And after you do that a few times, you're stuck with Austin Hooper in the 10th round as your tight end one. So it may not smell as good to take Mark Andrews over a guy maybe like Adam Thielen or AJ Brown that we really like. But your team might look better in the end if you just swallow that pill, take a tight end early. And Mark Andrews, you know, if they can come close to their rate last year, he'll be a steal. But, you know, another guy it's really interesting to debate. So that is all we have for you today, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed our all overvalued team. Remember, don't hate the player, hate the ADP, but we recommend thinking twice about taking those players at those ADPs. I want to remind you that we, again, have awesome new material coming out at least weekly, oftentimes multiple days a week on our free Apex Insider blog. Please go to our website at apexfantasyleagues.com. Please get in touch with us on Twitter, Facebook, email. We love and welcome all feedback. We would love and appreciate a subscription, rating, review, any or all of them would be fantastic. Thank you for listening to the Apex Fantasy Football Podcast.